And that was One Land, Many Voices. Multiple segments. It's 9:59 a.m. Coming up at 10, we have Air Cascadia, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints. And at 11, the Pacific Underground crew shares their problematic favorites, those pop culture classics that were racist and or offensive. They'll explore why we're drawn to them and the importance of media literacy. And thank you, KBOO members, for all of your generous support. For those listening who are not yet members of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm/give. And that is all coming up right after these important announcements. Keep it locked right here.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fix It Fair, starting at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, February 25th at Madison High School in Portland. Fix It Fairs bring people together to learn simple and effective ways to save money and be healthy at home this winter. They feature exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners throughout the day in both English and Spanish, on topics like food and nutrition, community resources, recycling, and more. Again, that's the Portland Fix It Fair on Saturday, February 25th from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Madison High School, 2735 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in March include Introduction to Music Theory, A Moment of Possibility, Finding Opportunity in Our Differences, Financial Freedom, Getting Empowered About Money in Your Life, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Friday, February 24th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your Antifa fabulous radio, 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO everywhere. Weather first, take a look outside. I don't know where you are, but where I am, we've got some serious patches of white all over the place. Some of it icy, I have to admit that. Some of it giant lumps of hail. But we've got a little bit of the white stuff mixed in there. Today, the region should see a little bit of rain and snow showers. Highs around 41. But tonight, same thing, with the temperatures dropping down into the low 30s, hovering around 33. East wind 5 to 9. Saturday, Darns, mostly sunny, highs around 46, and it's back to showers again by the evening, and low around 35. It's Sunday, rain and snow showers likely, highs around 44, and Sunday night, rain and snow and 36 degrees. How that works, I'll let you know when I make it in on Monday morning. And that's about it for the weather. And that's how we first perhaps sense the region feel it. So our guest today, Steve Horn, is back, and we also may be able to reach Tom Butchell from Lewis and Clark College. He is one of the main litigators opposing the Columbia River crossing. He's with Riverkeeper, and we'll try to get him on the line to talk a little bit about the strange, eerie coincidence that the minute Pruitt is screwed into place, installed, how many corrupt politicians does it take to screw in a Pruitt? Well, I guess we found out. Now that within 24 hours, people, 24 hours, we get an EPA guy that has vowed to destroy the EPA, and the people who were really behind the Columbia River crossing all of a sudden decide that they really need to stand up for the people and build a people a new bridge. Wow, what an extraordinary coincidence that is. 24 hours. So, just a note on the subject. When you have traffic congestion on a bridge, that does not tell you that you need a new bridge. That tells you that you've got too much traffic. You have exceeded the carrying capacity, no pun intended there, but you've exceeded the carrying capacity of your habitat. That's what that means. It doesn't mean you need a new bridge. And so that said, we want to try to just touch on that subject. A lot more happening, and as we always know, on Friday, when everybody just wants to get away from whatever it is that's pursuing them, or they're pursuing, this is the day when it all comes down. So this is a day to keep eyes and ears wide open. And as we all know, there's plenty to fill eyes and ears. If you take a look at the Smart Block recently, there's a story on how a Russian steel oligarch and Putin ally, and a guy that has amazing ties to the Trump family by marriage and, you know, all sorts of ways from here to there. Yeah, I mean, I'd even keep a close eye on the pets if I were you. So he's an ally. He basically put Putin in power. And he's now not only profiting from that, but he's profiting massively from the Keystone Pipeline, because guess what? He's the guy that builds the pipes. Yes, he's the pipe man. And watching him perform is kind of stunning. There is a key connection to Russia between all of these players out on the field. One of President Trump's first actions in office was to sign an executive order on January 24th that expedited the approval of the Keystone XL and every other pipeline they could think of across the country, Dakota Access, everything. The pipelines that are being contested right now in Florida, the whole works, which had the primary effect of energizing activists and bringing people out again by the hundreds and the thousands to stand in defense of land, water, air, so forth. So the Keystone XL, owned by TransCanada, that means tar sands, and it was blocked, the continuation was blocked in November, and Trump signed an order calling for the steel for U.S. pipelines to be made in the U.S., right, comes to make it in the U.S., to the maximum extent possible. 2 days later, TransCanada filed a new presidential permit applications for Keystone XL with the U.S. Department of State Department. The caveat language in Trump's steel order noted it appears to be designed to preserve a lot of wiggle room. In fact, in other words, it's not really going to be U.S. steel. In fact, what the Smart Blog found was that much of the steel for the Keystone XL has already been manufactured, and it's sitting in a field in rural North Dakota. This is for the Keystone XL. So what they also covered was that 40% of the steel created so far was manufactured in Canada by a subsidiary of Evraz. It's a company that's about a 3% owned by a particular guy, watch for this name everywhere, an oligarch by the name of Roman Abramovich. So more on him later. We're going to have Steve Horn up in just a moment. I did, back at the keyboard, I did a little bit of, I looked into this company, Evraz, owned by Roman Abramovich. I went to Violation Tracker. Whoa, what a website that is. You could be lost for days in there. So they track violations of all kinds of U.S. laws. So Evraz, Rocky Mountain Steel, they had an environmental violation in 2014. Again, they have a ton of workplace safety and health violations. 2016, it just goes on and on and on. Countless workplace safety and health violations. Railroad safety violation. And the results go on. Evraz just can't seem to do anything right as far as people and the environment are concerned. So as we work on this, after helping launch Putin's presidency in Russia, it's almost sometimes you're reading something or writing something about Russia or the United States and forget which country it is because the leadership is so similar and the mindset is almost identical. Rabid nationalism, absolute obeisance to an autocratic power whose words and actions are pretty much indecipherable to our followers, but accepted nonetheless. So it's the two countries seem to be. You're talking about the iceberg. Remember the bridge from Russia to the United States, and people and animals migrated back and forth on that land bridge thousands of years ago. We've done it again. Abramovich bought. He put Putin in power. He was also instrumental in vetting and picking Putin's cabinet. Does any of this sound familiar? Abramovich bought 41% stake in the steel producer Evraz. He'd owned 72% of the Russian state-owned oil company Sibneft, which became Gazprom. And before this, Sibneft merged with another company, Yukos, owned by, wait for it, Khodorkovsky. That's enough of the enough Russian nomenclature for one morning right now. Hopefully we'll get Steve Horn on the line in just a moment. A police officer in Portland, excuse me, not Portland, in Multnomah County was fired following an investigation into posts on his Facebook page that appeared to endorse violence against the Black Lives Matter movement. Yes, it did. Similarly to the, I believe it was a State Department advisor the other day making white power signs in a photograph. In the White House, it looks like. A police officer was fired. It was following an investigation into posts on his Facebook page that appeared to endorse violence against Black Lives Matter. He'd been on paid administrative leave since July when the police department began an investigation. This is Westland officer Tom Newberry, we are talking about, the police chief, Terry Timmeru, says that they closed the investigation. They've declined to say why Newberry was terminated. Wow, that's convenient. And in one Facebook post, Newberry shares a story of protesters blocking a road with his comment that when facing, and it quotes, such mobs, unquote, to push the, and then again, a quote, right pedal of the, on the, in the car, in his cruiser. In other words, hit the accelerator if you see Black Lives Matter defendant standing in the road protesting, as is their right to do. So Newberry had been there for 7 years, no longer there. Doubtless he'll be back in some powerful position in law enforcement in the very near future. Keep an eye on Newberry. He's a boy that's going to go far under this administration. Now, federal prosecutors have subpoenaed a former Oregon public broadcasting reporter to get him to testify in the second trial involving those who occupied the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Judge Anna Brown will hear oral arguments today on the government's attempt to compel a reporter to testify in the second trial. This, of course, we're going to try to follow that trial and see. This is, of course, from Sepulveda. He, of course, did a great deal of reporting on that. Everyone, of course, is waiting restlessly to see whether the people of Malheur County will, in fact, have justice this time around. How many trials does it take in the end? And the environmental and fishing groups now have sued the federal government yesterday to provide cooler water for salmon in the Columbia River system. Isn't that a little bit late? Shouldn't they have been pounded with lawsuits constantly for months now? Now that the fishing season is beginning to open up and down the rivers of the Pacific,